morning. Time to get up and go to work.
The Power Pack Morning Zoo. Are you kidding me?
Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vince Marotta.
Oh my, Vince. Who's better than Vince?
Sarah Cazell. And Jared Carlin.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mickley and Marotta mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince. Okay.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday, Valley sports fans. We've made it to the middle of the week and the middle of a playoff series. How's our basketball team doing?
Hold on. There's another. Hey, Harry, there's another turnover.
Harry, they're kicking the ball out of bounds.
They threw it away.
All right, before we move on with the show today, Jared Carlin is aware of this because I texted him this yesterday. But I left here and I went to Mountainside Fitness up the road, and I'm working out, and I look up and I'm like, what is this guy doing here? It was Robert Kennedy Jr.
Really?
And he was working out in his blue jeans.
Ooh, that guy.
Oh, he's that guy already.
Chafing.
Now, yes, and the absurdity of it, I was just like, okay, hold on. You know, every now and again, I see this guy flash across my television screen.
Yeah, Super Bowl. He had a Super Bowl commercial.
That's right.
Remember.
That's right. I'm like, what? So clearly he must be here campaigning for something.
What? He's running for president.
Aaron Rodgers wasn't there, was he?
So he is running for president.
Yes.
He's as an independent.
Okay.
And
okay.
Since he is an independent, neither one side or another, we could say, what a jackass this guy.
That is so funny. So I did go up and introduce myself to him.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, I did. I did just because I'm that kind of guy, right? I just wanted to see, is this really going on? And he was super nice, but he immediately starts reaching for my phone.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, why do you... He's like, take a picture with me. Oh, how's his voice go?
Not like that.
No, it didn't go like that. It'd be, I'll get to take a picture.
I can't do it.
And I said, no, I just wanted to say... No, it'll be good for you.
It'll be good for you.
So do you have a selfie with him?
I do, but I my phone is, I'll show it to you later, and I'm certainly not going to put it on social media because I am not in that world and I will not be in that world.
Did you ask him about the blue jeans? That's what I'm focused on.
No, I just assumed that he's one of these guys that needs a pump. You know, some of the guys that just kind of need to feel their biceps swollen. In order to kind of carry on with their day.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? There are guys like that. And so I think
you can't wear shorts or sweats when you're doing that.
I think he rolled into town and didn't have any gear with him and said, screw it.
Look at me. He shows up to work out in blue jeans. I show up to work in sweatpants.
Me too.
Get it right.
Yeah.
My clothing touches my body.
I'm sorry.
At any point. I can't.
It was just such a random occurrence. That's all. That's all I wanted to say.
Like, oh, here you are in real life. Wow.
Interesting things happen when you visit the gym.
Well, it's just
noted.
People, like I mentioned that to yesterday, you can't even say a politician's name without people suddenly inferring things.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're trying to tell them so, or you're supporting. Oh, you're with that. Oh, yeah. Yuck. Just yuck.
There was I was doing research actually for mustache, not a mustache, and I was doing all things Minnesota. So the name Walter Mondale came up.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm researching and I get the video clip of the 1984 presidential debate between Reagan and Mondale.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan had the famous line, they ask him, hey, you're already the oldest president ever. And they made this big deal out of his age going into that election. And Reagan had this great line about, hey, I promise not to exploit the youth and inexperience of my opponent, Walter Mondale, who's like, at that point, he just threw his hands up and he's like, I just lost this election.
That's funny.
But he was just laughing. And I was like, wow, it was civil. There was actually like civil discourse.
Isn't that amazing?
In politics,
right?
Back in the 80s.
Right.
Yes. Vintage.
Ronald Reagan, or as he would be known in modern politics, a young whippersnapper.
A young whippersnapper.
Yeah, about that. Start the show, ferret.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Any ball.
Any
ball coming. Any ball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
The Minnesota Timberwolves dismantled the Phoenix Suns once again, this time 105-93 in Game 2 of the Western Conference quarterfinals at Target Center. Suns got off to a very slow start early, but got things together in the second quarter, built an eight-point lead. Minnesota closed the half on a mini run to cut their deficit to one. Then the Timberwolves used a 17-4 run in the third to basically put the game on ice. Suns were once again careless with the basketball, and yes, that is an understatement. They committed 20 turnovers that led to 31 Timberwolves points. Meanwhile, the Suns converted 14 Minnesota turnovers into 2 points.
Oh.
Jaden McDaniel scored 25. Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley had 18 each. Let that sit in. Set in, I should say.
Sink in.
Wow, man. Sink in. Was I awake when I typed this? Suns big three got outplayed by that threesome of the T-Wolves. Gobert, Conley, and McDaniel.
Yes.
That does not bode well. T-Wolves lead 2-0. Game 3 of that series, Footprint Center, here in downtown Phoenix on Friday night.
Yeah, you and I shared exactly the same thought, that the big three on the court last night wasn't anybody who you might have thought, and they all played for the Timberwolves.
Yes. I think the top four or five players in that game were
Could
Timberwolves. For the second straight game, Grayson Allen left the contest after turning his right ankle. He started Tuesday after spraining the ankle in Saturday's game one loss, but it turned it again in the third quarter, did not return. X-rays again were negative. Frank Vogel again said after the game that Allen is day-to-day. It's been a quiet, frustrating series so far for Allen, who has scored a total of 7 points and has more ankle sprains than baskets in the two games.
2-1?
2-1. Tuesday night in the NBA, Indiana became the first team to win on the road in the playoffs. They beat Milwaukee 125-108 in Game 2 at Fiserv Forum. Pascal Siakam, 37 points for the Pacers. Miles Turner hit for 22. Bucks once again played without Giannis Antetokounmpo. That series now knotted up at 1-1. Game 3, Friday night in Indy. Dallas joined the Pacers as road winners last night. The Mavericks bounced back in Game 2, 96-93 over the Clippers, who did get Kawhi Leonard back from injury. I'm telling you, there's something to this star thing. Sacrifice a star, win a playoff game. Luka Doncic had 32 points and 9 assists for the Mavs. Series tied at 1. Game 3 of that series, also Friday night. That's back in Dallas. Only 2 games on the schedule tonight. First, it's Game 2 between the Heat and the Celtics at TD Garden in Boston. Celtics shooting for a 2-0 series lead. That one gets underway at 4 o'clock Arizona time on TNT, and that'll be followed by Pelicans Thunder Game 2. Thunder held on for a 2-point win in Game 1 on Sunday night. That game will tip at approximately 6:30, also on TNT. And one other basketball note, 76ers guard Tyrese Maxey named the Kia NBA Most Improved Player on Tuesday. Maxey averaged just under 26 points and over 6 assists per game this season and became an NBA All-Star for the first time. Kobe White of the Bulls was the runner-up, and Alperen Şengün of the Rockets finished third. Suns wing Grayson Allen did finish tied for 10th in the voting. He received 1 second place and 1 third place vote. D-backs busted out their bats in St. Louis. They pounded the Cardinals 14-1 at Busch Stadium. Cardinals jumped out to a 1-0 lead, but the D-backs produced 3 big innings. They got 4 in the third, 6 in the fifth, 4 more in the sixth to win easily. Pavin Smith highlighted things with a grand slam to close out the scoring. Smith drove in 6 runs on the night. And a good start for Tommy Henry, back from Reno. The lefty went 6 innings, allowing just 1 run on 5 hits while striking out 6.
He actually never made it to Reno.
He never did?
No, he reported the team they were in Salt Lake City. And so he never got back to Reno.
So he was with Reno, but not in
Salt Lake City when he got the call Sunday. Hey, Tommy, no hard feelings, right? We need you back up here.
Get out of Salt Lake City.
I'm more trouble with Salt Lake City.
At least something returned to Arizona after going to Salt Lake City.
That was it.
That series wraps up today at Busch. Jordan Montgomery throwing for the D-backs against veteran right-hander Kyle Gibson. First pitch, an early one, 10:15 Arizona time. meaning we give way to the D-backs pregame coverage at 9:30.
Wait. We're pulling a Gambo today?
We're preempted.
We're pulling a Gambo in Burns today?
Not even an East Coast game either.
I think this is the first time we've been preempted since the pandemic.
Oh.
Am I right?
No, you're right, because we never used to take, now that the Diamondbacks are a hot property.
Yeah.
Cool, good team that everyone wants to hear.
D-backs also made some roster moves before Tuesday's game. Actually, a lot of them. They did recall Henry and Andrew Saulfrank from AAA Reno. They placed pitchers Merrill Kelly and Miguel Castro on the 15-day injured list. Although, Kelly with a right shoulder strain, Torrey Lovello said it's probably going to be months before he's back. Both of those moves are retroactive to Saturday, April 20th. D-backs also acquired infielder Sergio Alcantara from the Pittsburgh Pirates for cash considerations. He was assigned to AAA Reno. This is his fifth different stint with the D-backs.
Is that right?
Yes. They also claimed left-handed pitcher Joe Jakes off waivers from the Red Sox. They placed lefty Kyle Nelson on the injured list. They released Jace Peterson officially and recalled right-hander Justin Martinez. Former ASU head football coach Herm Edwards agreed to a 5-year show cause penalty with the NCAA's Committee on Infractions for his role in ASU's recruiting violations stemming from illegal campus visits by more than 30 recruits during the dead period during COVID-19 in 2020. Six other staff members agreed to penalties between 3 and 10 years. So we're not going to get into it much today. We got a huge, busy show.
But I am of the mindset that Michael Crow and Ray Anderson need to explain why Herm Edwards got $4 million on the way out the door.
Yeah. And that will be coming up in the Rush Hour
review. All right, good. Okay. It's a great question. $4.4 million to go away?
I mean, seriously, they need to explain this.
After Crow basically exonerated him? Arizona guard KJ Lewis announced Tuesday he's going through the NBA draft process, but will maintain his college eligibility. He averaged 6 points and 3 rebounds per game in 36 contests in his first year with the Wildcats this past season. There is your splash for Wednesday, April 24th. Let's get into the muck, shall we? The muck of a Game 2 loss in Minnesota for the Suns. It's Bickley and Marotta mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, everybody, it's Burnsy, and once again, the Timberwolves completely outplayed the Suns, especially in that second half, and now the Suns are in an 0-2 hole. Can the Suns dig themselves out, or is it too late? We react starting at straight up 2 o'clock on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Gobert shows left side, McDaniels for three. That's off the mark. Long rebound to Conley. He'll shoot a three in the corner and hit it. Right in front of the Suns bench, Mike Conley celebrates the three. Timberwolves fans celebrate the biggest lead of the night.
It was the biggest lead of the night at that point, John Bloom, but it got bigger. Got up all the way to 19 points. It was a 12-point victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves, 105-93. And what was a strange, frustrating journey for the Phoenix Suns last night.
Yeah, you can say that again.
They did not come out ready to play once again. Mm-hmm. In the first part of the ball game, I believe, let me check my notes here. Three turnovers in the first 2.5 minutes before they scored a point.
Yep.
They let you know, once again, this is what we're going to put out there tonight. Mm-hmm. Now, they did get better. They got things together. They played, I think, pretty good defense on the night.
But I agree with that.
The lack of care with the basketball, It'll make you pull your hair out. This is, and I know what people are going to say, and let's get into the big question.
All right.
They don't have a point guard. That's true. This is contributing to this, absolutely 100% contributing to it. But the more frustrating part to me is, all right, you realize you don't have a point guard. When is it going to kick in that taking care of the basketball is actually very important?
Yeah.
And that, it's just careless pass after careless pass after bad decision over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you wonder how that can happen. Well, on a team that really is connected, it wouldn't happen. And yet somehow I think it's also very indicative of sort of the mindset and the psyche of this team and why they feel so broken on some nights and in so many different areas. Yeah, that really confounds me. If you're a basketball team and you've been together for a good chunk of time, and this team has been together for a good chunk of time, you cannot be committing 20 turnovers in a playoff game. It's like throwing 4 interceptions in an NFL playoff game. You can't do it. And they just made it look easy. alarmingly easy. 20 turnovers in a playoff game?
I mean, the 29-point difference in points off turnovers, because the Suns forced 14 turnovers and converted that into 2 points. That's almost impossible to do in its own right.
Listen, I thought the Suns held up physically in game one for one quarter, and I think they started to break apart then. Last night, they made it through two quarters, and it all broke apart in the third quarter. Maybe Friday night we'll get three quarters out of them. And maybe by game four, we're going to be in business.
Here was Frank Vogel talking about the cause of all the turnovers.
We got to handle their pressure better. I thought we found some things in the first half that that worked really well in terms of our movement and passing cut offense. We didn't sustain it when they went on runs. Okay, we didn't stay locked into that plan. I had too many lost possessions because of it. But, we've had issues with that throughout the course of this year of taking care of the basketball. It reared its head tonight. And, this team is an elite defensive team, the best defensive team in the league that we're playing against. So you have to execute.
There's a lot of we gotta and a lot of tipping the cap to the opponent. It's sounding very familiar to Valley sports fans maybe follow a football team in town and not a basketball team. There was a great point. I don't know which telecast you watched last night. I watched the TNT telecast taped the local telecast.
Okay.
Greg Anthony made a good point. Now, he said some really weird things, too. But he made a good point about there was one particular possession where Bradley Beal was really struggling to bring the ball up against pressure. And why the Suns feel like they're obligated to dribble against pressure and not just pass the ball and advance with the pass.
Yep.
They are so, so deliberate getting into an offense. It is just
the exact opposite
of 7 seconds or less.
Yeah, and if they're not being picked up in the backcourt, they're being jumped right at the midcourt line.
Yes.
Which stalls them out to begin. And now they're scrambling to kind of get an offense going. And that's what was really painful to me. The third quarter, the juxtaposition of a defense that just fell apart, allowing blow-bys. I mean, Jaden McDaniels blew by Kevin Durant like he was nothing. Mm-hmm. And just the poor quality of the offensive possessions on the other end, and then in between, they're just bickering with refs while the score just gets larger and larger and larger.
Look, and early in that game, there was a lot on both sides, but man, did the Suns just absolutely melt down?
Oh, did they? No doubt.
Between the ears, Vogel talked about handling, dealing with "quote unquote" bad calls by the referees.
Next play, you let them hear about it. You let the rest hear about it. Hopefully, they can understand that maybe they missed a couple. Okay, and it swings back your way. You try to do the best you can with that, but your group's got to turn their focus to the next play. You know, that's something we talked about before the playoffs even started. Okay, things are going to go wrong in certain stretches, whether it's our offense, our defense, foul trouble, okay, the refs. Things are going to go wrong, at certain points in the playoffs, and you have to have a next play mindset. You have to execute the next action, okay, locked into what's happening next, not what just happened previously.
One of the most frustrating
themes.
Well done, Jared.
One of the most frustrating themes through two games is the Timberwolves came into this as the young team, the upstart team. Even though they're the higher seed playing with home court advantage, they don't have a ton of playoff experience. The Suns are old. This is an old basketball team dripping with playoff experience, and they've handled it so poorly.
Yeah.
And this constant, this is our first playoff run together. All right, how about tapping into your individual experiences in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Maybe using that.
Right.
And by the way, that was game 84.
It's very depressing.
It is.
It's very depressing that a team with three offensive weapons like Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker can struggle to score 40-plus points in a half. It's crazy to me.
Did they get to that 85-point plateau we were hoping
Here's a stat for you. McDaniels, Conley, and Gobert combined for 61 points on 23 of 38 shooting. That big three outscored the Suns' big three by 9 points.
Oh, boy.
Durant, Booker, and Beal, 18 of 45 shooting.
It's embarrassing. That third quarter was just such a gut punch, and yet who here is surprised? Nobody.
Well, I mean,
we kind of had this fear. We really were hoping that the Suns had found something.
Yeah. We were hoping.
We were hoping.
And I look, the Suns were leading by a point at the half, and I felt horrible about things because they led by a point in a half where Karl Anthony Towns couldn't get out of his own way, and Anthony Edwards, you had to make sure he was on the court. He was doing nothing. Mike Conley and Jaden McDaniels kept the T-Wolves in the game, kept them afloat, and then helped push them over the top.
That's exactly what
happened. They were both fantastic.
Yeah, Jaden McDaniels both fantastic.
The best player on the floor last
night. Yeah, listen, and this is a guy with a career scoring average of 9-point-something points per game.
Yeah.
And that's who's killing you?
25 last night. We'll have a lot more on the Suns. We'll talk to Tim Ring later on in the show.
We'll have
some open phone time in the 8 o'clock hour. Woo, it's playoff basketball. It's fantastic. Coming up next, the D-backs. They got back on track with another blowout win over the Cardinals. We'll relive it in D-backs Daily next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball.
D-backs Daily.
Game 2 of a 3-game series in St. Louis. Tommy Henry back with the D-backs after making his way to Salt Lake City, Utah, but called back to take on lefty Steven Matz for St. Louis. It would be the Cardinals drawing first blood in the first inning with one out in the bottom of the first. Wilson Contreras put his team on the board.
Here comes the 2-0, and Contreras swings and blasts it. Left center field, no doubt about it. It's 1-0 Cardinals.
439 feet on the monster home run for Contreras. Cardinals with the one-run lead. Chris Garagiola on the call. To the third we will go. Jake McCarthy, Ketel Marte drew one-out walks from Matz, who then struck out Gabby Moreno for out number two. That would bring up Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
They have a positive run differential of 26, and that might go higher. It's a base hit into right center field. McCarthy coming around to score, and Gurriel has tied the game at one with a two-out RBI hit.
Yeah, one pitch later, Christian Walker gave the D-backs their first lead in a big way.
Swung on and blasted out to left field. Donovan at the wall, and it's gone! Christian Walker, his fourth of the year, a three-run shot, and the Diamondbacks in front, 4-1.
Yes, now Henry working with a lead. He'd retire the Cardinals in order in the third. He gave up a hit, but posted another zero in the fourth. That's when the offense really helped him out. Ketel Marte doubled to lead off. That brought up Gabby Moreno.
There's a swing and a ball blistered towards left center field. That's going to get down for a base hit. Marte rounding third. He will score. And after a wide turnaround first, Moreno retreats. He'll settle for the RBI single.
Yeah, four-run lead for Arizona at that point. They were not nearly done. Gurriel singled, sending Moreno to second. Christian Walker would pop out to first for the first out. That would end Matz's night. St. Louis went with lefty reliever Zach Thompson, who would strike out Eugenio Suarez for the second out. He would not have the same luck against the former Cardinal, Randall Grichuk.
Grichuk with an open stance. The pitch to him is swung on. That's hit towards left center field. That's going to get down for a base hit. Moreno rounding third. He will score. The throw goes into third. Into second goes Grichuk. And the Diamondbacks cash in to make it 6-1 with runners at second and third and still two outs in the inning.
Still two outs. Lots of two-out runs. How about a couple more from Pavin Smith?
Swinging a ball hit well deep to left field. Going back, Donovan still going over his head, and that ball is off the wall. Two runs will score. The Diamondbacks blowing it open in the fifth inning as Pavin comes through, and it's 8-1 Diamondbacks.
How about you, Kevin Newman?
1-0. That is hit high. That one's hit deep. This one's got a chance, and that ball is gone. Ho-ho! Into Big Macland. Kevin Newman, first of the year, a no-doubter, and it's double digits for the Diamondbacks, 10-1.
Yeah, 10-1.
Wait a minute. Do I hear the great crowd in St. Louis booing?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were the greatest baseball fans in history.
Well, they invented the game there.
That's what I thought.
You know that, right? They would add to it in a big way in the sixth. Bases loaded. Hey, guess what? Two outs. No big deal, Pavin Smith.
Watch. First pitch belted. Deep to right field. And Nukepar turns, looks, and see you later. Pavin Smith, have a night. And it is an absolute rout here in St. Louis.
14-1. You get the idea. That's how it ended, with the D-backs scoring their third victory of the season of at least 13 runs.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Which is very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Pavin Smith, two extra base hits, the grand slam, six runs batted in. Torey Lovello on the offense.
I think hitting is contagious. I think, you know, when they get the right focus and they lock it in, they can put up a big crooked number. And I think it has a lot to do with the approach. I think it has a lot to do with the pitch selection. And I can't explain it, right? There's some huge numbers in three games. We scored a lot of runs. And that's what they tease me with. It makes me think we can do it all the time. And when we don't, I try to dissect why it doesn't happen. And it just forces us to coach them up and just try to get the best out of them every single day.
Yeah, but opening night, 16-1. They had a 17-1 game. Now a 14-1 game. How
so three times scoring at least 14 runs this year. It's something they did just three times in the past 3 years combined.
Crazy.
Well, what's bizarre about it is we've spent a lot of time talking about the inconsistency of this offense, how they seem to flash early, disappear for long stretches of time, and how they're kind of clunky that way. Well, when you wait in these three absurd offensive performances, they now lead Major League Baseball in runs scored. more than one run more per game than last year.
Wow.
And they're still underwater, sub 500. So you hope that, and I also wondered about Corbin Carroll. I'm taking was just a night off.
Yes, but I think there was probably another purpose.
Wink, wink,
there.
Benching a night off. Okay, I don't know.
Their offense explodes when Corbin Carroll's not on the.
That's
on the field.
I don't want to cause and correlation this to death, but.
All right, Pavin Smith and Kevin Newman are not going to carry this team for more than a game
all right,
at a time.
We have that on tape now, Jarrett. You watch your mouth.
Yeah. You watch your dirty mouth, Ferret.
The bigger news happened before the game with the roster moves, and it's bad news. As Merrill Kelly was placed on the 15-day injured list. Torrey Lovello, we don't have the actual audio of it, but the quote was, he is definitely in a non-throw situation, just taking it day by day with treatment, trying to get him asymptomatic, and there's clearly going to be some re-imaging in the coming weeks to find out how he's healing and what we can do to push this forward. He also said to the effect of, we thought it might be a few weeks, it's going to be longer than that. When questioned if Kelly would be back before the All-Star break, there was kind of some hesitation. I don't know. We're going to have to see how that goes. Basically, I'm paraphrasing Torrey Lovello. Put into perspective, the All-Star break is almost 3 months from now.
That quote actually took the wind out of me. I actually had to sit down and read it again because it, unfortunately, changes everything. We're talking about a pitcher that was so so integral to what they did in the postseason last year, a guy that had really kind of evolved to be one of the game's better starting pitchers, and now he's down. The Diamondbacks have 12 players on the injured list. 8 of them are pitchers.
That's crazy. Every day, Torrey Lovello said it. I feel like every day we're putting somebody else on the list. Three more pitchers on the list yesterday.
So listen, everything about how I'm going to consume this baseball team, it's now changed. This team now is clearly in underdog mode. How are you going to be able to get through the next couple of months?
Yeah.
In hopes that Eduardo Rodriguez joins the staff, in hopes that Merrill Kelly gets back.
Yeah, which, look, the way they started this season, and yes, the injuries have been a factor. They haven't really handled having the target on their backs very well early on. Maybe reverting back to underdog mode suits them well.
Maybe.
It certainly served them well last year.
Man, how big was that Jordan Montgomery trade now? I mean, signing now.
Yes, yeah. Very big.
He's pitching today, though. You never know what's going to happen.
No, don't put that out there, Vinny.
10:15 is
you wash your dirty mouth.
I will wash. Speaking of non-dirty mouths, thank you for not saying integral. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Montgomery on the mound today in the series finale in St. Louis. Early start, 10:15, 9:30 pregame here on Arizona Sports on 98.7. And the Arizona Sports app. Coming up next, the busy week also has got a football feel to it. The NFL draft gets underway tomorrow. We're going to talk draft with Charles Davis from CBS and NFL Network next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, everybody, it's Bernsey. It's draft day eve in the NFL, and the Cardinals have a big decision to make tomorrow. If that decision is not an elite wide receiver, is this draft a failure? We'll answer that on today's Burns and Gambo show, starting at 2 on Arizona Sports. Oh, believe it or not, the NFL draft almost upon us. Tomorrow night it gets underway in Detroit. And here to talk NFL draft with us, one of our favorite guests from NFL Media, CBS, Charles Davis joins us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Charles!
Charles!
Happy draft eve to you, sir.
And happy draft eve to you gentlemen as well.
I see you got your latest mock, your last mock out on NFL.com today.
Did it drop?
Oh,
finally?
I'm looking at it right now, Charles. And I want to start
you,
here.
Do you know the agony I went through? Do you guys know the loss of sleep? Do you know that if I could sue the NFL mock draft gods, I would be in front of them. I'd wear the powdered wig and robes to go in front of them and argue that you're taking life away from all of us by requiring these darn mock drafts.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I've read a million of them. I've never done one. I never want to. But the interesting thing that stood out to me first, and we'll get to the Cardinals at number four, but the way you have the quarterbacks going, because a lot of people have the quarterbacks maybe 1 through 4, maybe 1 through 5. You've got 6 going in the top 13, but a separation. Williams, Daniels, McCarthy going 1, 2, 3. And then as you get later in the first round, Drake May falling to 11, Bo Nix to Denver at 12, and Michael Penix Jr. all the way up to 13 with the Raiders. I'd love to hear your thinking on that.
Yeah, I don't do trades in my mock draft. Mm-hmm. I'm not smart enough. So the 1, 2, 3, 4 you're seeing from everyone are all the smart people who are saying trade's going to happen. Someone's going to come up and talk to Monty Austin Ford at 4, take that spot, take the fourth quarterback, which makes a lot of sense. Okay, I absolutely, truly believe that there's a great possibility of that happening. Whether they get it done with Monty at 4, Joe Ortiz, the GM of the Los Angeles Chargers, he's open for business. Remember, they're cap strapped. So he's like, cool, who wants to talk? Plus, they have a lot of holes to fill. Isn't it amazing how fast the Chargers went from that's the job you want to take this offseason to that roster's not as good as we thought? It happened quick. And it's true in my mind. So the Giants have had discussions about, can they possibly be in the quarterback ranks at 6? You see where I'm going with this. I just don't do trades. I have everyone stick and pick in mind. I don't have enough brain power to do this trade to that, that to that, that to that. But the Raiders are a team that discussed moving up. Denver's a team that's discussed moving up. You see where I'm going with this?
I do, yeah.
The Vikings with 2 picks in the first round, obviously. And I'm going to give you my wild card first round team. The Rams have a first round pick for the first time since 2016, have 11 picks overall. And Les Snead, the author of F Those Picks, might say, love those picks. Now let's use them.
Yeah. That's interesting. All right, as a former defensive back, I'm curious your take on the wide receivers in this draft. The Cardinals obviously have a pressing need. They need a number one, and they need one that's going to work well for Kyler Murray, giving him a big target downfield, all of that stuff. Where if you were the GM of the Cardinals, how do you handicap and rank these wide receivers?
Well, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one guy. Is it as huge a gap at wide receiver position as maybe it is like Brock Bowers is number one tight end, who's the number two? No, it's not that big because there's a chasm there, okay? But at wide receiver, to me, it's still Marvin Harrison at 1. Everyone's fighting it out over whether it's Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze at 2 or 3, which one goes 2, which one goes 3. I get it, and Brian Thomas Jr. seems to be the acknowledged 4 out of LSU, but there's so many guys. Adonai Mitchell from Texas. Can't discount Xavier Worthy because he ran 4.21. Troy Franklin didn't have the greatest combine, but his production is big, but he's 177 pounds. Yeah. Keon Coleman's a big wide receiver. Is he as nifty as you want him to be, or is he a jump ball guy? And then you got, you know, what's his name, Ortega Whiteside. Whiteside, remember him coming out of Stanford?
Uh-huh.
J.J. Ortega-Whiteside, who could only be a red zone jump ball type guy and not even that. See, so those are things you're trying to put in there, you know? Devontae Walker played half a year at North Carolina because of the NCAA issue. There's a million receivers. Ladd McConkey, if you want a slot. Okay, I'll stop there.
But you're flexing, Charles.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you've got in terms of the flavor and how many of them come off the board in the first round. And then when we start day 2, that second round at the top, how fast do they start to come off the board again? Does someone make a move overnight to move up to the top there to get one of those receivers? Because they're flying off the board at that point.
Yeah. Charles Davis, our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. I want to stay on the wide receivers and focus on Marvin Harrison Jr. I read a piece that appeared on The Athletic that Bruce Feldman put together, and it was a collection of anonymous quotes from NFL people that are working in the league right now. And yeah, it indicated, hey, it's not a foregone conclusion that Harrison's the best receiver. But one quote in particular from an NFL personnel guy said, I'm paraphrasing, I wish he would have done more in terms of workouts. He seems a little bit casual to me. And that kind of knocked him down on the pecking order in this person's eyes. In your intel that you've done on this class, have you heard those critiques on Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah, I certainly have. And you know something? You guys have to cover college sports too, right? So I'm going to give you my analogy on it. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The NIL. So the NIL is in play now, right? It is breaking down that when athletic departments go and ask for money, which they always do, right? You go and get the big money from people to support your program. The older those people skew, the more that they say, I'll give you money for the program, but it's all going for bricks and mortar. Go for facilities, go for this, go for that, scholarships, whatever. But not a dime of my money goes for NIL. The younger people skew that have money, they work with what are they called, the collectives now?
Yeah.
That are putting it together for that. They're like, put that money out there and go get me some good football players and win some football games. The older scouts want you to work out.
Yeah.
The younger scouts, they kind of get that you have the leverage now.
Uh-huh.
And I'll give you one last thing on Marvin Harrison Jr. Maybe not a lot of people know, but I'm telling you, this is straight goods. When he went to the combine, remember he didn't work out.
Sure.
And everybody was flipping out, right? He and his representatives contacted the combine a month ahead of time and said, listen, he's doing an internship. He doesn't want to miss a lot of work. Can he come in a day early, get measured, tested, you know, talk to teams, do all that stuff? He's not doing the field workouts anyway. Can he come in and do that and then get back to his internship? They did it without fanfare. They didn't announce it to the world. The combine people said absolutely, worked with him and did it. Done.
Yeah.
So anyone saying casual, I don't think it's casual.
Wow.
I think it's deliberate. Do we have to do all this working out when it's all out there on tape?
No.
Okay, so the flip side is, remember the name Sidney Jones from Washington, the corner?
Yep. Yeah.
He did the pro day workout, right? Do you remember when he blew his Achilles at the pro day workout? Yeah. Do you remember exactly what went down?
I don't remember the exact details.
The workout was over, and someone, one of the scouts, and no one's fault, it happens all the time, but this tells you where the bad luck kicks in. Can we get one more rep?
Ugh.
And it blew.
Yeah. So that's something of a false narrative that's kind of shrouding over Marvin Harrison Jr. I think that's very interesting.
Remember, it's my opinion.
No, okay? I think you're right on the money.
It's my opinion on this one. It's what I know to be true in terms of that one instance. But the idea that we're going to put these kids through multiple things, each team comes in, works them out. If a kid wants to do it, I'm saying more power to him. If a kid is a Marvin Harrison Jr. and says,
Yeah.
It's a new world, folks.
Well, listen, you're so right. The old guard mentality is that if you as a young football player aren't willing to jump through hoops to embrace this opportunity that we are affording you, there must be a character defect here.
Yes. How dare you, young man, defy me who's come here to work you out?
Exactly.
Isn't that pathetic? Look. I'm about to be 60. That's us as old people. That's what we do. We're not used to our authority being questioned. We're used to you wanting to jump over hoops because we showed up in town. And by the way, when I was in school, that's how it worked.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
And by the way, you know who would have been jumping through hoops? Me. Okay? So I totally get it. But I was never as good as Marvin Harrison Jr. I was never as good as these top level guys where you can make the dictate and do it. Caleb Williams. No, I'm not doing medical for anyone I'm not going to visit with. Imagine saying that 10 years ago.
Yeah, how about it?
5 years ago?
Blackballed.
Yeah. Charles, wish we had another hour with you.
Great stuff,
Enjoy
man.
The draft, and thanks for putting out the mock draft. We appreciate all the hard work, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. You know, I thought about putting it out there like Lloyd Dobler and Say Anything and put it on a boombox and hold it up in front of him, hold it up in front of your studio. But we just decided to go social media on this one. So.
That's good enough. Good enough. Thanks, Charles. We'll talk soon.
Be good, guys.
All right, thanks. Care. Charles Davis, NFL analyst for CBS Sports, NFL Media. He joined us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up, the Suns cranked up their defense. They beefed up their rebounding, but a lot of season-long issues popped up again in their frustrating Game 2 loss in Minnesota. We'll get into those issues next. It's Pickley and Murata Mornings here on this Wednesday, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.